I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday afternoon. This hour, how police are trained or may need a lot more training to handle people with mental illness. This hour will take us from Milwaukee and Meg Kissinger, whose latest article in her series Chronic Crisis appeared last Sunday and is on the Milwaukee Police mental health training, to San Antonio later in the hour and Leon Evans, president of the Center for Healthcare Services in that city. He developed the Crisis Care Center to reduce inappropriate incarceration and hospitalization of people with mental illness. And it's amazing what they offer. 48-hour inpatient psychiatric unit, outpatient services, centers for drug or alcohol detox, plus housing for people with mental illness and also job training. We'll be welcoming your phone calls as we look at this important issue this hour. Our number, as always, is 800-486-8655. And the email is talk@WPR.org. The death of Dontre Hamilton, who had a history of paranoid schizophrenia and was shot and killed in Red Arrow Park in downtown Milwaukee on April 30th, has raised many questions about police use of force and police and the wider community's response to mental illness. A major question is, would more mental health training, and if so, what should that be, for police keep some of these tragedies from happening? Meg Kissinger wrote, she's been writing on issues concerning mental health for a long time, and she's won a number of awards for her writing. She wrote a story, Milwaukee Police Promise on Mental Health Training Unmet, that appeared in Sunday's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Meg is our guest in studio. She is a veteran reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel a long time. We won't say how long, because all of a sudden you realize, am I that old? Am I even doing it this long? But she's just been nominated for Pulitzer. She won the Polk Award for this series that she's been writing on for some time, and we're delighted to have her in studio with us for half of this show. Hello, Meg. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Kathleen. Happy to be here.
Why don't we start with this? And it's interesting how the Dontre Hamilton case has really focused attention on this issue. There have been marches in Milwaukee. The DA is looking at this, and people are very upset about the way this man was treated, but it's brought forward a fairly important conversation.
It has, and it's always challenging to look at something in the rearview mirror and whatever metaphor you want to throw at that, if it's a Monday morning quarterback, whatever, to second guess, or to speculate, how much of a role did a lack of thorough mental health training for this officer play a role in this? So it's difficult to say, but I think it's a legitimate question, to look at how are our officers equipped to deal with this? And this was invited. This question was invited by none other than the police chief himself, mm-hmm. when in a press conference, after the shooting, called it intolerable, the number of police calls that they receive each day. He put that estimate at 26 calls a day involving somebody in a psychiatric crisis. And in our system, the police are the first line in the overwhelming majority of people in a psychiatric crisis who are in need of some kind of care.
In terms of the Dontre Hamilton case, two officers did find him sleeping there and evidently thought he was not going to hurt anybody, and then another officer came in response to another call. Do you know if those first two officers had been trained in crisis intervention?
I don't know
not?
That. I know that the officer who was involved in the shooting did not have CIT training. I don't know if the initial officers did. There is what they call the HOT team. So it's the homeless outreach team for the Milwaukee Police that concentrates its effort, in areas where there are more homeless, which would include downtown. And those officers do get some mental health training. But I couldn't say for certainty if those two officers did.
You know this field very well, and as you said, it's near and dear to your heart. We can talk about why in a moment. But from your extensive examination, what kind of training do you think police officers need to keep incidents like this from happening?
Well, my favorite example is what's going on in Houston. And last year, when we were looking at how clogged our mental health system is in Milwaukee County and what can we do to keep things flowing better. We found that the problem really began at the front door. And so we have police officers picking up people and taking them out to the county in handcuffs. And it appears to be a criminal proceeding. It's not. It's not a crime to be mentally ill, but that's how they do things. And so so we looked for best practices, and everybody told us, go to Houston. Now, is that a panacea? Of course not. No system is altogether perfect. But of those that we looked at, that one seems to have kind of what I consider to be a very winning combination of taking a police officer and pairing that officer with a mental health professional. And so what they do is they their dispatchers are trained. So when they get a call on a domestic violence case or whatever, however the call comes in, the dispatcher can ask the kind of questions to know, has this person been seen by psychiatrists or is on medication for psychiatric illness? Anyway, and if it's determined that is one that likely is going to result in a hospitalization, they dispatch the officer alongside the mental health professional, and together they ride in the squad car, and they have their laptops with them, and they can access the mental health information, and very often they're able to diffuse that situation.
And Milwaukee has one such squad, is that right?
Right. So what happened was when, in the effort again to improve conditions here, they saw that training for police officers is a critical component of this. And so they dispatched a team. Chief Flynn sent a contingent of officers from Milwaukee to Houston to look at its model. And so a team from here went there and did ride-alongs and learned what they had to offer. And then they came back and put in a proposal to develop something like that here. So far, the response has been to have one officer assigned to one mental health professional. That just began last year. It's an officer by the name of Chad Stiles, who's a great guy and has a passion for mental health care. And he is paired with a mental health professional. And they are dispatched by Milwaukee Police, and they go in a Milwaukee Police squad. And they've had great success. As the story on Sunday noted, fewer than 20% of their contacts end up in an emergency detention. So it's really quite impressive. The problem is they need about 20 more.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would also appear to me from what we're going to talk about later, the San Antonio model, is that you need, and evidently there was some history of this in the police department and the wider community in Hegarty's reign, which mm-hmm. was, what, 2004 or so,
right,
where people realized there was a problem. And Chief Flynn may have a point that it can't just be the purview of the police department. You have to have the mental health community involved in this.
Exactly.
You have to have the state involved in this in terms
right.
of allocating money to make sure that people go to the right place and get some help for their problems as well.
Exactly.
So talk about what happened in 2004 right. and then what happened subsequently.
Sure. And I well remember that because it was a heartbreaking case, as is this Dontre Hamilton case. So in 2004, what was happening is a number of hospitals had closed its doors to its psychiatric wards for a number of reasons. The funding wasn't there, and they just weren't making enough money offering those services. So a lot of those hospitals closed. So there were fewer and fewer places to take people in a psychiatric crisis. St. Michael's closed, others. So you had a long backlog, and police officers, you need to stay with the person in crisis. And they were having to wait, in some cases, up to 24 hours.
Oh,
and so you can imagine the strain, both on the patient and on the police officer. And so this was all coming to a head, and my great minds got together to talk about a solution. While this was happening, and they had a summit, the Mental Health Task Force was formed, and they decided that there are too many silos, as is so often the case in Milwaukee. You know, there's too many people kind of trying to solve the problem alone and not collaborating. And so they convened this big summit at the Italian Community Center and decided we need to get the private hospitals to the table, the public mental health system. We need to engage the medical college, the police officers, the district attorneys. Everybody, come and let's talk about how to make this better. And they invited at that time Sam Cochran, who is a police lieutenant, now retired, but was in Memphis, and he started this crisis intervention team approach because of some tragedies that they had had there, some psychiatric patients who had been shot and killed by police. Anyway, kind of ironically, as Milwaukee is discussing this, there was a young man, 18-year-old guy from the South Side, Michael Blucher was his name, and he, in the midst of all this promise for reform, he was shot and killed by a police officer. And it was, you know, an incident where he grabbed a ornamental knife off of a wall and started swinging it around. And there was one police officer was dispatched who had no training, and he ended up shooting and killing him. And by all accounts, that officer was just devastated. And so that underscored, you know, the need. Police were clamoring for more support, you know, for training for their officers, and just a better communication and more resources for them to take the folks that they see on a daily basis.
So that happened for a while?
So Chief Haggerty promised at the time that there would be training for all officers, and there was. So in early 2005, in the months of February and March, there were sessions that all officers attended. They one session each. So it was 3 hours of training. So we can debate whether or not that is sufficient. And, you know, I think it's very important to note, and I've been told this umpteen times, and I certainly understand it, police officers are not psychologists, and they don't want to be.
Right.
And that's not... that's not their role. But the reality is that the folks that they come into contact with very likely are going to have psychiatric issues. So while we don't want to cast them in the role of street psychologist, you want to be able to give them the tools to most effectively and compassionately deal with the people that they're serving.
Mm-hmm. So what is the policy now? How many officers get this kind of training, and how effective has the training been?
So then back in 2004, as each officer got that three-hour training, and I guess there was an hour for question and answers that was optional, but anyway, they also then launched this CIT program in Milwaukee. So CIT, Crisis Intervention Team Training, is a 40-hour program. And so it's you know, again, is that going to make you a street psychologist? Certainly not. 40 hours 1 week versus whatever a master's level psychologist
right.
or psychiatrist would undergo. But nonetheless, it gives you, you know, some foundation. So one of the hallmarks of that program is that they really want officers to volunteer for that. They don't want to impose that on all officers because they want that to be an open, you know, people to be open-minded to that. So so that's kind of debatable, whether or not you should impose that or whether, you know, if you're going to make it voluntary, are there going to be enough people volunteering for that? And so they set the goal at 25%. Originally, it was 20%. Anyway, so that's what they had. The first year, they had four classes. And then since then, it's really dwindled. They've had one class each year in the last several years. And they have a maximum of 40 officers per class. So 40 officers a year are being trained. Now, since this situation with Dontre Hamilton, the police department is stepping it up. So they are now going to give 2 days of training to every officer. and they're going to have CIT refresher classes, because by now some of those CIT officers have been around for quite a while, and maybe they need a little refresher. And they're also going to make it mandatory for recruits. So any new officers coming into the department will undergo CIT training.
So this is good.
This is good. Yeah, this is good. But as I said earlier, I feel just from looking at other systems that what they've got going in Houston, you know, seems to be especially good. So, you know, not only do you have so many officers CIT trained, but then you have a special, they have a mental health, it's now a division. It started out as a mental health unit, but it proved to be so successful and so popular that they have expanded that to a division. And so they work hand in glove with the behavioral health department for Harris County, which is their county in Houston. They can share funding. They can share training. They collaborate, truly collaborate on, you know, in everything from responding to these emergencies to dealing with it and where the patients go.
Mm-hmm. Is some of this a matter of money tell us, because I would think that the police department could say, listen, we understand this is important. We run into this, but we've got a lot of crime to deal with and we're stretched to the max as it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what Chief Flynn has said. And so, you know, our resources are only going to go so far. So, yes, like everything in the world, as you know, two rules in journalism, right? If your mother tells you she loves you, check it out. And the second is to follow the money. So following the money, of course, yes, it's all about funding. But what they've done there, and your guest in the second half of the show can give you more details on that, is that they then have collaborated. So they've applied for and received quite a lot of federal funds and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, et cetera. They have managed to look for and use their funding in a very wise fashion.
Mm-hmm. And what about the mental health community in Milwaukee County? Because we're talking about Milwaukee. Is it robust enough to handle the kinds of services that are needed so we're not having people go to an emergency room and then 9 months later or even earlier, they're going back to the emergency room because the police have brought them there?
Yes. Well, there was just a study, a capacity study that was done under the purview of the Wisconsin the Public Policy Forum, and the county commissioned it because they wanted to know how many beds are available.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was determined is that currently there is adequate bed space in when you combine both the county psychiatric hospital and the private hospitals that offer psychiatric services. So they don't want them to reduce any further, but where we're at right now is adequate. So it's a matter of collaboration,
mm-hmm.
because every emergency room doctor of any private hospital will tell you that this is a problem. You know, people in psychiatric crisis can be quite disruptive, and not every hospital offers that. They don't offer inpatient, and it's very complicated to compel somebody into care who doesn't want it. You know, that requires a legal proceeding, and that invites its own layer lawyers and a medical a treatment director examining the patient. It's that unleashes all kinds of procedures.
We have time for a few phone calls from Meg if you'd like to join us. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. We're talking about her story, part of her Chronic Crisis series, which appeared in Sunday's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Milwaukee Police Promise on Mental Health Training Unmet. In terms of diffusing situations, you mentioned that incident of getting this thing, ornamental sword that was on a wall. How difficult do you think it is for police to diffuse a situation that could become potentially violent so they could be fearful of their lives?
Well, I'm imagining that it's very difficult. Now, I've attended some CIT classes, but I certainly have not been you know, through the police academy, and police officers would be, of course, the the best to ask that of. But the ones that I have talked to at length about this do talk about that. You know, why do you have to shoot to kill?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just shoot somebody in the foot? And they'll say that any kind of deadly force, if a person is in an agitated state, that can be lethal. And so they are trained to contain the threat. And if somebody's coming at you with even an ornamental sword that's made out of metal, that could do some big time damage. So that's a matter of debate, you know, whether or not the shoot to apparently it's not shoot to kill, it's shoot to contain the threat.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean?
Mm-hmm. And from what I've read, and we'll talk to Antonio about this, but if you have this collaborative approach and you're using a mental health person and a police officer, that somehow, and all of these facilities in San Antonio, they claim that they're saving money. They're saving the county money
right.
by this approach, which
right. yes.
runs counter to what you might believe.
Right. No, that is true. Houston, well, San Antonio does it too, but so does Houston. And yes, it makes sense too. You know, when you're collaborating, then so care. You know, in Milwaukee County, care is $1,800 a day inpatient. If you can have a outpatient clinic, if there is a respite home, if there are places short of going behind a locked door of a hospital. All the better. You know, you're not only are you saving money, but more important, you're offering some choices to somebody who is not well.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a couple phone calls for you. Travis in Buffalo City, Wisconsin. Hi, Travis.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Sure.
I listen to it as often as I can. the question I have is, are the police officers trained on how to work with a military veteran that has PTSD?
That's a great question. Yes, and that's one of the many illnesses or problems that they talk about. So, and I know that's a burgeoning field,
mm-hmm.
and certainly they do come across many people that's struggling with PTSD.
So how large is the problem with the Milwaukee Police Department? You've done an examination of numbers. Have we had a number of fatalities of people with psychiatric illness killed by police?
What I did was I took a look at all the deaths in police custody over the last 10 years and then looked for, we immediately discounted anything that was like a crime being committed and police officers responding to that. So we looked at people, cases where they were called specifically because somebody was in a psychiatric crisis, and then looked to see did they have a psychiatric history that the police could have known about. And then we tried to determine from that, you know, were the had the officers received CIT training. We weren't able to do all of that because the police records, they didn't get back to us. They did on some cases, but didn't on others. Like, for example, we knew that the officer involved in the Dontre Hamilton case did not have CIT training. And there was another case in April of 2013 that was clearly a psychiatric. The person had just been released from the mental health complex, and the police were called in to take him back, and those officers were not trained. But, you know, again, that's a very cursory look, and it would be impossible to say how much of a factor that
mm-hmm.
played.
Yeah. Thank you, Travis, for your call. Lisa in Stevens Point. Hi.
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 My brother we've been dealing with my brother who has paranoid schizophrenia for over 20 years now, and we've had many, many run-ins with the law, and it's really hard for families sometimes to realize they're almost afraid to call the police because they never know what's going to happen. but it's usually in such a dire situation that they need to.
Right.
So families kind of have to, you know, families have to weigh how dangerous is the situation before they pick up the phone to call the police. You know, if they can't get their family member or their loved one into care on their own, there really sometimes isn't a choice.
Exactly.
And then the situation just escalates.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's just heartbreaking, and it's you know, it just puts such a lot of pressure on the family members. So Kathleen mentioned that this is a topic near and dear mm-hmm. to my heart, and I come by it naturally because I lost a brother and a sister to suicide. So, you know, I know that, you know, mental illness can devastate families, and very often it's the, you know, well, almost always it's the family that's on the front line, you know, taking it and then having to make the judgment call, do you call the police? But very often it's your only option, and that was, I think, the hardest thing on this story. I talked to a man whose son was shot and killed. It was he who called the police to get help for his son had grabbed a knife and was chasing his sister around, and the man called the police to calm down the situation, and he went after the police with knives, and in front of this older man's eyes, you know, the police shot and killed him. Now, was it a justified shooting? That's what the district attorney found, because this man was coming at them with two knives, you know, one in each hand. But it's just a heartbreak. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so devastating, and you know, you can't blame the police on that.
It's all heartbreaking. Lisa, thank you very much for the call. And before we go to San Antonio, respond to this, if you would. We did talk to the Milwaukee Police Department and asked them to at least call in. But we do have this statement from Lieutenant Mark Stanmeyer from the Milwaukee Police Department, who says that he'll offer that just because he was never trained to be a paramedic doesn't mean that he wasn't trained to help someone who wasn't breathing or someone who needed a tourniquet put on their bleeding leg. Just because I haven't been trained to be a tactical officer doesn't mean I haven't been trained to take assignments involving armed suspects. Members of specialty units are that, specialists. That doesn't mean that the rest of our members aren't adequately trained or qualified to take assignments outside their specialty. As you know, our CIT officers and even Houston's officers occasionally use force, even deadly force, on persons challenged by mental illness.
Right. Sometimes there's just no way around it. You know, that's that. A person is dangerous to themselves and to the police officers, and it's going to end tragically. I maintain that any training is going to be helpful. I believe that. I mean, is there a return on the investment? You know, I do think that mental illness is one of the most greatly misunderstood you know, illnesses of our day, and the more and the most more widespread than we imagine. So I don't see how 40 hours of training can hurt.
Meg Kissinger, thank you very much. Thanks for all of your reporting.
Sure, thank you for having
your long career, 35, I guess we can say. You're a veteran journalist, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter, and she's won lots and lots of awards, a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for her stories on the failure of the government to require regulate toxic chemicals in household products, Polk Award for environmental reporting, and this Chronic Crisis series has been very thoroughly examining Milwaukee County's troubled mental health system. It did win a George Polk Award last year. Thanks very much to you, Meg. We're going to go to San Antonio, where they have this really incredible thing set up. They have a mental health squad, which answers the frequent emergency calls where mental illness may be an issue. But they also have transformed their mental health system into a program that many have said should be a model for the nation. Why is that? We'll talk about it as we continue here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to San Antonio now, where National Public Radio has done several reports on remarkable things that have happened in San Antonio, and most states in the country have sent delegates to San Antonio to see if they can model their own health, mental health systems after the one that is there. They have this 6-person unit answering frequent emergency calls where mental health issues may be involved. They have a restoration center with a full array of mental and physical health services. Leon Evans is with us, president and chief executive officer of the Center for Healthcare Services in San Antonio. He, in 2000, began a dramatic system change in the county focused on reducing inappropriate incarceration and hospitalization of persons with mental illness and other disabilities. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Leon. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Hello, Leon. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Good afternoon. Yeah, happy to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you here. So back in April of 2000, what made you decide to begin this dramatic system change? What were you seeing that needed fixing?
Well, before I had this job, when I started in April 2000, I was the director of community services for the Texas Department of Mental Health and Mental Retardation. And in that position, I became painfully aware of all the numbers of huge numbers of people who were nonviolent, who are being criminalized, put in jail and prisons. And when I got here, I wanted to start to do something about it. I got tired of being a state bureaucrat and wanted to go back and into direct services. And so I became the CEO here, and we've had a miraculous community collaboration that's done all these wonderful things with some of the poorest funding in the United States.
Hmm. So we were talking about a lack of collaboration here in Milwaukee, that everybody has his or her own territory and they don't talk to each other. On an issue like this, you need law enforcement, you need mental health facilities, you need so many people to sit at the same table. How come you were able to do that and keep that going in San Antonio?
Well, we have, like you said, we have lots of people. Almost every state's visited in 6 or 7 countries, and they're always impressed with our programs. But the thing they always are, confounded about is, how'd you get everybody to work together?
Right.
So when I was the state director, I actually funded some pilots to try to get folks to work together. And, we hired consultants in the regions, and they would put together these great plans. But when it came to actual operationalizing the plan, people would say, well, that's a great plan, but not with my money or my staff. And so when I got here, I knew that if I tried to pull the sheriff and the police chief and judges and hospitals and EMS and consumers and families together, probably nobody would have shown up. And if anybody had, it had been somebody that didn't have any power that could say no but not yes. So I went talked to the county judge, who's still a county judge, a guy named Nelson Wolf, who was the mayor before that and the state senator before that, and I explained the problem, and I said, Judge, we need somebody who will make us do it, somebody who will make us come together and work on this issue together. Would you champion this cause? And, of course, he's a very bright guy, and he did. And he also got the mayor to co-sign a letter, and so we brought all these important people together are charged with promoting public safety and having a healthy community. And he charged us to work together and start looking at ways we could come together and start diverting people who shouldn't be in jail or in emergency rooms or on our streets that are homeless. And so that's how we got started. And we were smart enough to put a judge, Polly Jackson Spencer, who does our civil commitments, in charge of that committee, and off we went.
And off you went, that's for sure. Off you really went. Let's look at some of the components. I guess we have one of these now in Milwaukee, and it's very, very successful. But you have I wonder how many of these units that answer the emergency calls, and we're getting in Milwaukee 26 to 29 calls a day, the police department is, where mental health illness may be an issue. How do you handle those in San Antonio?
Well, one of the first things our committee did when we came together is we decided that we need to do the, and I was listening to your previous guest, Meg, we decided the first thing we need to do is train law enforcement officers. And as she was saying, mental illness is a very strange disease, and we don't understand it, and it's very scary. If you just think about it, when a newborn's crying and screaming, it's kind of terrifying because you don't know what's happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
But babies do that. And older people, when they get older and they have dementia or Alzheimer's or something like that, that's also painful, you know, for family and friends to have people lose their cognition and their recognition and their joy of life. But we expect that. You know, it doesn't freak us out. But when you talk about a young person in high school or college and a young adult, when they have these strange behaviors, that just kind of goes over the edge, and we really don't need to, we don't know how to handle it. So law enforcement officers, when they're trained, they go to academy, and they're trained to use their command voice and their command presence. Well, that works real well on the general public because we're lucid. When it doesn't work well, and when the public's most at risk, and actually when law enforcement officers are most at risk, is when they encounter somebody with a mental illness, who may be paranoid or delusional or even family disturbance. Those are highly emotional situations and also dangerous. Or we know what happened in Ferguson recently, where there was a lot of racial tension,
mm-hmm.
and the law enforcement officers showed up in body armor and mask and
right.
in armored vehicles. Things went bad. Mm-hmm. So you know, when you get in front of people in these unlogical, highly emotional situations, and you use your command voice, command presence, people get hurt. And so what CIT does, the 40-hour course, because the role-playing is a real important part, is it teaches these officers to kind of recognize this is not a typical situation, and they learn these de-escalation skills where they can step back, you know, kind of talk the person down, then have a good disposition rather than some kind of confrontational disposition where somebody gets hurt.
Tell me more about de-escalation. I'm just wondering how hard it is to do that. What techniques are used? That's a tough one to diffuse the kind of high intensity that you just described, Leon.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a set of skills that are fairly easy to teach.
Really?
In fact, we have a 40-hour course, and all these courses do that. And we also have people that come in and do role-playing, like, you know, they're schizophrenic or they're paranoid or uh-huh. they have depression or they're suicidal. And these officers have to use these skills. So, you know, sometimes you step back rather than getting in people's face. You know, you use a gentle to talk down procedure. Maybe sometimes you don't, you know, look them right in the eye to begin with. You ask them questions about, you know, are you okay? You know, can I help?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you find a way to connect with folks. And I can tell you that our sheriff, who's a retired two-star general, she requires all of her deputies to go through the 40-hour training and also her jailers because she wants to use verbal intervention before force. And she just transformed our jail in our county sheriff's department. Our police chief, McManus, is the first police chief in the United States who requires all of his officers to go through their 40-hour training.
Mm-hmm.
And he won't let you carry a taser before you've been to the training because he wants to use verbal intervention before force.
So you would believe that all police officers should go through this?
Well, our sheriff and police chief believe that because a couple things happen. You know, if you look at that Pareto effect, the 20% of the people that end up taking up most of the public resources. Many times it's people with mental illness and alcohol and drug problems or co-occurring disorder. So
mm-hmm.
if you just think about it, probably 25% or more people that go to jail have a mental illness. You know, 65 to 75% of people are arrested or arrested for some kind of alcohol or drug problem. The chronically and persistently homeless, as you Google the cost of taxpayers of the homeless, you'll get all kinds of studies. And I think the cheapest I saw was about $30,000 a year because the homeless have lots of contact with law enforcement. They're in and out of jail. They're in and out of emergency rooms. And across the United States, people with severe mental illness die 25 years sooner than the general population.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Texas, it's 29 years sooner. But when they die, they're unfunded. They go to hospitals or dying of congestive heart failure and liver disease. And many times they're million-dollar patients. And, you know, so they're, you know, if you, just any place you look, because we've, you know, cut funding for mental health services so drastically, if the only tool you got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And right now it's the counties and the cities, public safety net, that tend to be the mental health system. So, that's not right to criminalize somebody for having an illness. And we actually have a lot of good data here on costs and outcomes that if you get them in treatment, they do very well.
So in addition to this squad, you have built this whole separate facility. The array of mental and physical health services is truly remarkable.
Yes, if you don't have, so you train officers to recognize these disorders, and then in Texas, officers have discretion, so if they haven't committed a major crime, they can bring them to treatment rather than taking them to jail or emergency rooms. In our case, the Restoration Center, which does sobering, detox, and mental health crisis intervention and services, we're up to 2,000 people a month that are brought there. So over 24,000 people a year who used to go to jail or emergency rooms are taken to treatment.
So it winds up saving money.
It does. In fact, we get money from the county, the city, hospitals, because we can actually prove to them that we're saving them money in other ways. And I'll give you an example. You mentioned, I got here in 2000. We actually started this training in 2002 and opened our first little crisis unit up in 2003, kind of the end of 2002. Well, in 2002, the Bexar County Jail was being cited by the Jail Standards Commission for overcrowding and deplorable conditions. They actually had to buy space from other jails to get stay in compliance. The county hired an expert that said you need to build another 1,000 beds on the detention center right away or the county jail. I encouraged the judge not to do that, and we started our intervention program. They never built the 1,000 beds, so you imagine what that would have cost them to staff it. And we grew by 350,000 people during this last census. And during this past year, we've had up to 1,000 empty beds in the county jail. So these diversion programs really work. We can't take credit for all that empty capacity because, the population's aging. When people get older, they tend not to, be as in much trouble. And there are programs like reentry programs and other things, but our county judge and others give us credit for the majority of the decrease in the county jail.
Mm-hmm.
The police chief, before I got here, Chief Ortiz actually was keeping data on the amount of time his officers were spending in emergency rooms, and they were spending 8 to 14 hours in emergency rooms waiting for psychiatric evaluations and medical clearance. And since there weren't any services available, most of those people end up going to jail anyway. He was spending $600,000 in overtime. And, so it's not only the jail costs, it's all these other costs.
Right.
And emergency rooms are small, and if they're packed with inappropriate people, then you may have had a heart attack or in a car wreck, and the emergency room is full of inappropriate people. Then you get on drive-by, and that puts you and other people's health at risk. So besides, you go to an emergency room, most of these people are unfunded. You walk into any emergency room, it's like $3,000.
Yeah.
And anyway, we can prove to the county we save a lot of money, so they're willing to invest in this.
Same thing
with the hospitals and emergency rooms.
Truly remarkable what you've done. Leon Evans is our guest. We welcome phone calls for him if you'd like to join us in the remaining time of this hour. He's the president and chief executive officer of the Center for Healthcare Services in San Antonio, Texas. And you've heard what they have done to deal with people who may have serious mental illness in terms of how the police respond, which they do everywhere now in the jails and police department in San Antonio. It's become a model, as you heard him say, for all other states and also for all other countries. Many people have gone to this city to see if they can model their own mental health systems and their police response to people with mental illness after this particular system they have in San Antonio. He started the whole thing back in April of 2000, and it has been enormously successful. What do you think? Should we be doing the same all over Wisconsin? Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Join us quickly if you can, as our time is limited. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number for this hour, 800-486-8655. And let's go to Reed in Madison first. Hi, Reed. You're on with Leon.
Thank you. My quick question is this. After listening to the show today, what do you recommend, sir, as the next small step, maybe the next two or three small steps in the establishment of such a center as yours in places in Wisconsin, for example, like Wisconsin and Madison and Green Bay and on and on and on.
Yes. In fact, just this year, there's a program just like ours being set up in Wyandotte in Johnson County, the Kansas City area. I went up there and did a consultation for a community collaboration, and they visited here a couple times. And the Kansas legislature, has really cut Health and Human Services a lot, has a pilot there. Same thing in Polk County in Des Moines. So these programs are kind of popping up. But when I talk to folks, I tell them, I said, don't do our model. What's really made our model work is our communities come together, and we manage this program together. So we it's called the Bexar County model because we have law enforcement and ER docs and EMS and consumers and families, and we come together and we look at what's working and not working. We keep a lot of data on cost and outcomes, and so we all take a great pride because we can see that we're making a difference in people's lives and improving the public safety net and actually saving taxpayers' dollars. So I would suggest that you find community leaders there in Milwaukee who would be willing to pull all these factions together and sit down and start coming up with a community plan, decide what you're going to do first, make sure you're tracking it, see if it's working. If it's not, you can always change it. And then when that's successful, you just keep adding features, and it won't be long before you're doing amazing things.
Thanks, Reed, so much for the call. Craig in Sturgeon Bay, hi.
Hi. We just heard how police in San Antonio and the sheriffs are sensitive to mental health. Question is, do the court systems also have a sensitivity to mental health?
They do. Over the years, they've seen how treatment really works. So here in Bexar County, the San Antonio area, we actually have veterans courts, mental health courts, drug courts, children's courts. Children's courts, of course, aren't about the kids. It's about their parents who are experiencing these problems and need to get into treatment. And we also, on the civil side, have an intensive outpatient commitment for people that are fragile, that need that black robe effect, that therapeutic justice, somebody to help them, encourage them to get into treatment. Because a lot of times, if you're real ill, you don't even know you have an illness. And, you may be treatment resistant, and your disease is so painful for family and friends, you become estranged. And so there's nobody there to help you remember to take your medication or see the doctor or encourage you. And that's the reason so many of these folks are homeless, have, mental illnesses. And, of course, they self-medicate with alcohol and drugs.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Craig, for the call. We go to Perry, in Baraboo. Hi, Perry.
Hi. I'm interested what the state laws are in Texas as to how a person can be kept in a mental institution once they're there. My experience in Wisconsin with my 33-year-old son was that although he was very ill and the psychiatrist up at Winnebago wanted to keep him hospitalized because he was not actually suicidal or homicidal, they had to let him go according to the judge and the state laws in Wisconsin.
Yeah, so that's kind of true every place. So here what happens is law enforcement officers have the ability to do a warrantless apprehension if they think a person's in danger of themselves or others or blatantly psychotic. We happen to be the mental health authority for Bexar County. So under law, we can keep somebody for 48 hours and do a psychiatric evaluation. Determine what they need, and if they need to be hospitalized, we start the paperwork, and there's a process there to protect people's rights, but we can get them hospitalized if they need treatment. Other people come in and brought by law enforcement officers, or they maybe need to see their psychiatrist, get their medication adjusted, or go to one of our step-down programs like crisis residential or short-term treatment. Not everybody goes to an inpatient setting, but we have lots of step downs and alternatives that would meet a person's need based on what their current situation is.
Thank you, Perry.
We also use a lot of people in recovery, so we do motivational engagement. So we have people that have been sick and been addicted that work with these folks, and so they can kind of see you know, there's hope there. There's a chance to, for recovery. There's a chance to lead a meaningful life, and that's powerful as medicine.
Yeah, Leon, thank you very much for all you're doing and for being with us. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Leon Evans, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Center for Healthcare Services in San Antonio, Texas. He developed the Crisis Care Center to reduce inappropriate incarceration and hospitalization of persons with mental illness. Remarkable program in that city and the country. Thanks to Scott Myers for producing this hour, and thanks to Meg Kissinger as well for being with us the first half hour. Thanks to Scott for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up in just a moment, and we'll return with another hour of Thursday afternoon conversation.